This is the Echo Network. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. It is May 1st. It's about 4:37 Arizona time, which is in the same time zone as Kevin Scobie. You can go look that one up. I'm, of course, joined by longtime hosts and friends, Michael Engel and Jeff Herr. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
You know.
Fantastic.
So we literally started talking on Skype about 10, 15 minutes ago and had nothing planned for the show because we came to the realization that when your team's in first place or actually playing good baseball, it's a lot harder to come up with things to talk about because you're not fixing problems. So we did have some stuff to talk about, so it might not be as exciting of a show as we've had in the past, and it might end up being 2 hours because if you've listened to us for very long, you know that's how things go. It's been a great start of the season for the Royals. It's been a while since we've did a live show. We recently did the we got all the audio together finally from the whose statue was it, Mike? I'm having a brain fart.
Bob Gibson.
Yes. Apparently somebody played baseball for the Cardinals. Apparently kind of good.
I don't know.
Bob Gibson got a statue in Omaha, and it was all a pretty cool thing. Joe Torre talked, a lot of other dignitaries and baseball who's who, and we put it all together for you, and we thank Hunter Samuels for the audio on that, and you can follow him on Twitter, at Hunter Samuels, and he actually is a pretty funny guy. He gets into some great comedic back and forth with people, especially Leske. Him and Leske have had some really good ones, and so I like to eavesdrop on Hunter's conversations because they're usually pretty funny. And then Mike Vimosi was there as well, and he wrote a couple of great articles for Kings of Kauffman, but no audio. So we're going to be working on some different things here at the show. I've got a lot of things working. I'm trying to do a national wraparound of audio that I find out there to do with the Royals, and I want to put that together in the show. I just haven't had time to do it, but a lot of it coming from Fantasy Focus the last couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about that here in a minute, but we're going to kick off let's kick off with a little humor today. If you're listening within the next couple of days, you've probably been on Twitter if you're a Twitter person, and you can of course follow all of us on Twitter at the Jeff Report, at Michael Engel, and at Casey Royal Man, or Casey Baseball Vault, or Kings of Kauffman. You pick, they're all out there. But there's been, people have had a lot of fun with Chris Getz getting the last couple of days off for allergies. I'm fortunate. I really don't have many allergies, but I tell you, when I moved to Arizona, I started to sneeze a lot more. There's definitely some new stuff out here, yeah. So maybe there's something new there in Kansas City while it's snowing. By the way, snow in May, guys? How are you liking that?
Well, we haven't gotten it yet. It's just in the forecast. It's been a stupid weather month, and it's 80 degrees today. Yeah, it's just been crazy. I mean, it dumps like a foot of snow on us in February, and then like 2 days later, it's another foot of snow, and then March, you kind of tease us with 70 degrees, and then it's back to 20 the next day. It's just, I don't know what happened, but nature got drunk, basically.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been beautiful here. It's like 65 here at 9,000.
Yeah, whatever, whatever.
But with that said, December, when it's 12 below, and I am just fighting to find a road to get to Phoenix so that I can get some decent weather, you guys can be giving me the ha-ha. So anyways, so he should be back. He's not hurt. I know some people probably say that's unfortunate because they would like to see somebody else at second base than Chris Getz. But, and this isn't something that we were going to talk about, but I want to bring this up really quick. A lot of people, if you watch Twitter, everybody's got the answer to fix the roster. You bring David Lowe up to be the fourth outfielder, and you let Dyson and Kane play in center and in right where Francoeur is. You know, at third base, you just send Moose down, and, of course, who's started to turn it around, and you bring Anthony Sarantelli up, who I'm not real sure is a third baseman, but some people on Twitter have decided this. But what people don't seem to get is that there are 25 men on this roster, and there's guys already that, you know, if they wanted to do what you're talking about, they could make Francoeur the fourth outfielder. They don't need to bring David Lowe up in order to do that. They're just not going to do that. And as far as third base goes, and I think this is a great example of it, Chris Getz has been out for a couple of days, but they didn't run down to get Johnny Giovitella from Omaha. They used Elliot Johnson, and that's why Elliot Johnson was brought here, is because he can play pretty much every position except for catcher and pitcher. And on top of that, Miguel Tejada is here for a reason as well. So
apparently.
Yes.
I haven't figured it out yet.
So at some point, guys, I mean, do you, at this point in this season, do you even see Johnny Giovitella getting any time up here before 40-man time, even if somebody like Chris Getz got hurt?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Chris Getz is the starting second baseman. You know, he's in that position because they want him to handle that position most of the time. They know that Elliot Johnson full-time at second base is not going to be very productive. He can fill in, he can play multiple positions, and that's fine if that's all he's doing. But if they have an actual option in Johnny Giovitella, who's hitting like 325 in Omaha, and I think he went on a stretch of like 15 of 18 or something, just something crazy over a four-game stretch. You know, if they have an obvious option, then, yeah, I mean, you make that move to bring him up. The difference, you kind of see it with Moustakas, where they almost have to and also want to be more patient, is because there isn't a ready option. I mean, your options in AAA, those guys are mostly, you know, non-roster invitee guys, minor league free agents, you know, veterans who are trying to kind of fight their way back, and not necessarily prospects or anybody, you know, that you feel comfortable plugging in third base for a month or what have you. So, you know, that would really leave the options, if Mike Moustakas was sent down, to be Miguel Tejada or Elliot Johnson. And again, neither one of those are that much better. And you always have the opportunity that Moustakas can figure it out. And over his last four or five games, you know, this is before the May 1st game, you know, he just hit his first home run last night. He's, I think, like 6 of his last 16 or something. So things are, you know, slowly but surely turning around. And, you know, maybe the adjustments that he made, you know, sometime last week are starting to finally come around this week. And maybe that's as low as he goes. So it's really, really easy to just panic and start saying, well, we got to make this change and this change and this change. At this stage of the season, it's really, really, really early to do that. It's, you know, you're 1 month in, they're 14-10, you know, they're in first place by like 11 percentage points. So, you know, why freak out and try to make all these changes? Now, if they want to take Johnny Giovitella and bring him up over Getz, I'm fine with that, but they're not going to do that yet. I mean, Getz is probably going to be back in the lineup tomorrow. He only missed 2 games, and he could have went today, too. So it's just, you know, they wanted to get Elliot Johnson back in after a couple good days.
And, see, my thing on this is I just, this team does crazy stuff like that, though, and I could totally see him saying, okay, Elliot Johnson's your starter, or Miguel Tejada's your starter, and we still have Elliot Johnson as a backup, so we can, you know, bring up another reliever or something, which they don't need. But I could see him doing something crazy like that. I just, you know, it goes back to having true faith in the organization. It's not that I don't trust the organization. They've put, you know, at least for 20-some games, they've put a first-place team together, and it's great to see. It's just, this whole thing with second base has been so weird, and the Jeff Francoeur situation as well. We've been told that, you know, they have a short leash on him, and
well, it depends on how you define short leash.
Yeah, so I guess, I mean, it just depends on what more they're going to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at the bench players. Elliot Johnson has 20 at bats. Miguel Tejada has 13 at bats. Drew Dyson has 20 at bats. You know, they're pretty comfortable with the group that they have every day in the lineup. So I don't think they're going to be looking to try. If they were that comfortable with any of those guys, I think they'd find more ways to get them into the lineup than what they're doing. And they're just not. maybe Dyson. Dyson, I think, is valuable enough that he could play a little bit more, where maybe you know, do a two-thirds platoon with Francoeur or something like that. But, you know, I don't think they're really pushing too much to use their bench more than what they are, which is just bench players.
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of funny, the second base situation, because, I don't know, the way they've handled it, like, unless you think, and they have kind of talked about Christian Colon and how he was, I mean, we obviously didn't have, the Royals didn't have Alcides Escobar when he was drafted, Christian Colon, that is, but there was talk after Alcides Escobar came over that, you know, Colon might be shifting to second base, but it almost seems like the reason they kind of kept Getz around is because he's that good placeholder, and they've expected a Johnny Giovitella or a Christian Colon to kind of come up and take it, and they haven't really done it, especially nope. Christian Colon, but then Johnny Giovitella, I mean, it's almost like they don't even want Johnny Giovitella to take that role, because, I mean, I don't know if they've really given him the most fair shot. You know, he definitely hasn't been given a chance, the chance that Moustakas and Hosmer have, and there's reason for that. But all the same, I think you look at, kind of segueing into the first point of players maybe moving down or up, I mean, I think with Mike Moustakas, Mike, you said it was too early in the season to really kind of make a panic move like that. And I agree to a certain extent if this was Moustakas' issue was only this season. You know, right. I think we looked at his rookie year in 2011. I mean, he had a lot of struggles, and then looked like he put him behind him first half of last year, and then just tanked in the last part of the season. Mm-hmm. And those same issues carried over to this year. And that's where I think you get concerned. That's where I think you look at, you know, maybe moving down to the minors as a viable option, not necessarily just because the guy isn't producing, because especially we saw it at the beginning of last year, Eric Hosmer wasn't producing, but he looked fine. You know, he was still hitting the ball hard. And, you know, then eventually it snowballed into where he was just, it kind of took a life of its own, and he really was starting to play really poor. But at the start, he was still doing things right. It just wasn't falling. It wasn't falling his way. Well, it appears most of what Moustakas is doing is not right. And that's why I think minor leagues becomes a more viable option in this scenario, because if he has a hitch in his swing, if he's uppercut swing, whatever is going on, you know, I'm not a scout, so I can't really look, especially not on TV, and see if there's anything wrong with his swing, but the Royals should be able to diagnose that. And if there is something, then that's where you can move him down and he can figure that out and get his confidence back and, you know, be in a situation where you can concentrate on fixing that and then come up, and then he doesn't have to worry about fixing it against major league pitching. Then all he has to worry about are the things that he has more control over there, like the pitch recognition and things like that. So,
yeah, I totally agree with that.
And I think that's where it really gets valid, but it is early. And like, he had a pretty good game last night. So hopefully that's him getting out of it. And he's figured out, I noticed over the last week or so, it seems to be he's a little bit more patient at the plate. He's kind of changing his approach a little bit.
Yeah.
It seems like he had three walks in a few games ago. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. So, I mean, he's walked 9 times. The only player that's walked more is Billy Butler. Which is surprising, because why would they not just challenge him right now? So it's clearly he's laying off some of the right pitches, which is that's a good sign. It's just that once he swings, it's looked horrible.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, if that's the end result, is that he can fix this, but out of it he learns plate discipline, and then not only does he become the hitter that we thought he could be, but then maybe he's an even more of an on-base guy than we ever thought. I mean,
yeah,
that's best case scenario. That's one of those situations where it's kind of cliche, but they say, oh, you know, it's good to have a little bit of failure. Well, if that was the end result, which I'm not saying it will be, but if that was, then that would certainly be a good failure, if you will.
Well, he's had a good amount of failure too. I mean, you're right about that. It, you know, the I'm usually the last one to kind of get on that stuff. Like last year, I never wanted Hosmer to go down because, well, I mean, Eric Hosmer is kind of my Alex Gordon for Scobes and all that. So I didn't want to see him go down. But, you know, it's with Moustakas, you're right about, you know, it's really tough to make those adjustments at the big league level. And for him, it did seem like it, especially early on, that it was something mechanical, and then it became mental, and then it was both, so it snowballed. But yeah, I mean, I was ready to understand, you know, why they would do that. It wasn't, you know, that I was going to be upset or angry about it. It was just that, you know, everybody reacted immediately and every at bat. So let's send them down, let's send them down. You know, and I think that some of that is just, you know, Twitter and overreaction and things like that. I want to go back to the Giovitella thing, what you said about him not getting quite the same opportunity, and you're completely right. Giovitella has 376 career plate appearances in the big leagues, and Dayton Moore is in a couple of spots on record talking about how you don't really know about a player until their first 1,000 plate appearances. So it's almost
I even thought he said 1,500 almost. Is it 1,000?
He may have said that at some other point too. It's kind of like the process, the time frame changes.
Exactly.
That as well. You know, it's 5 to 7 years now, it's like 8 to 10. But yeah, I mean, Giovitella's he's played 99 career games. I mean, not even a full season. And it almost seems like the Royals are thoroughly convinced that he's not going to figure it out. You know, they've said that he needs to figure out his glove. Well, you know, look at him. He's definitely improved there. You know, it's to the point where in spring training they were talking about putting him out in the outfield for, you know, even just, you know, late inning or, you know, just to fill in emergency situations. But it was pretty clear that they were comfortable enough with him at second base that they were going to go do that. So, you know, there's something in that that doesn't quite fit, and it's either that they overvalue some of the things that Chris Getz does, his speed, his bunting, things like that. And, you know, really, it's like you said, Giovitella didn't take the job when he had the opportunity to do it. And so maybe that's stuck in their mind as well. But he definitely hasn't gotten the opportunity that Hosmer and Moustakas have. And some of that's probably financial. I mean, they're going to be less likely to give an opportunity to a guy like Giovitella, who signed for, you know, six figures rather than $6 million like Hosmer. But it's still something that he's a second round pick, you know, so they clearly noticed that he had the talent to do it, and he's hit every stage of the minors. So, you know, maybe he's just going to be a 4A player, but I think there's a lot more upside in Giovitella getting the opportunity to at least let's find out if he can actually do it for a full season or not. And if he doesn't, then that's fine. I can accept that. That's a possibility, but you kind of run into the same thing that you did with Keila Kaiahui, where he hits every single thing in AAA. He looks like a monster, and then he comes up and he's awful. And the thing is, the Royals could have found that out in 2009, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And you don't find that out until 2011. At that point, you can't get anything for him. You know, you can't. It's too late to fix anything at that stage. You just kind of have to cut bait. And, you know, that's kind of what it feels like might end up happening to Giovitella, unless they finally commit at some point this season, like Chris Getz gets hurt and he steps in, something like that.
Yeah, and I liked what you said about how they overvalue some of his quote-unquote grit and his bunting ability and things like that, almost like they look at it like it's, you know, ability to hit a home run. Like the ability to, you know, a power hitter, be able to hit a home run, that's truly something that, you know, is a separating attribute. Some people have it, some people don't. Some people are Giancarlo Stanton, some people are Gerard
Chris Getz.
So, exactly. So, I mean, there is that, but a lot of the skills that Getz has are either these quote-unquote skills that are, you know, like you said, overvalued. I think they're either negligible or there's something that can be learned, you know, but the Royals won't ever go to Johnny Giovitella and say, hey, if you want to make the Major League roster, learn how to bat 600 on bunts and you'll be on this roster. You know, they don't say that because it's just because they're the Royals, you know. So it's just a weird, it's a weird situation. I think that, yeah, I mean, they're probably never going to know, we're probably never going to know about Johnny Giovatella. I think that we're past that point now where we can still think he's got a chance because they're in it to win it this year for real. You know, whether they actually do or not, who knows, but I think their mentality is that. So they're not going to give him that chance unless, like you said, something catastrophic happens.
Well, and I think on that note, we're going to take a quick break. We've kind of been all over the place here this first 20-some minutes of the show, and so we're going to take a quick break and get our list back together, and then we'll be right back on the other side. On the way out, after you get done listening here, for whatever way you might listen, if it's at kingsofkauffman.com or by going to KansasCityBaseballVault.com, or if you go over at the news site with Pine Tar Press, which is RoyalsPodcast.com, you can listen to us all those places. Well, now you got a new place to listen to us too, along with some other great podcasts of baseball over. And by the way, I haven't even told the guys about this yet. So hi, I got new news for you guys. We are now being carried at BaseballPodcast.net, which has a 24/7 live radio feed as well. So if you like to listen at your desk or whatever to different podcasts, you definitely can do that. We're featured there, and I'm not totally sure where they got the banner, but I like it. It just has both logos on it, the Royal Man Report and the Kansas City Baseball Vault. But check it out. They got shows from all over, including a very popular fantasy show that isn't ran by ESPN. So check it out. A lot of good stuff there, and they're good baseball people over there. So we'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages. The Vault.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And Frenchie being Frenchie.
Frenchie's like the weird big brother.
Well, and I actually have somewhere I want to go with that, so you'll find out when we get there.
Did we all see that Frenchie gave his opinion on the Jason Collins story?
No, what'd he have to say? I can only imagine it wasn't negative.
Yeah, it was exactly,
like, that's cool.
Exactly what you'd expect for Frenchie, you know, like, of course I would embrace him if it was, you know, one of my friends. We spend every day together, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
You know, so, like, that's what you would expect because Frenchie's a good dude. But I'm not sure how Jeff Francoeur's opinion on the Jason Collins story is relevant.
Well, it seemed like they asked everybody about it.
He's a professional athlete, so if you're a professional athlete,
it's relevant there. It's
basketball, so I guess I could see the relevance, but
it's just a hypothetical. What if somebody came out
in, yeah,
Major League Baseball? How would you react? Which is not really a fair question. You're not going to get a fair answer out of it just because what are they going to say? I mean, for the most part, they're just going to be, you know, polite about it until it actually happens. They don't really.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that there are
I don't know, whatever percent, and it's just known and nobody talks about it in all the sports. I mean,
yeah, well,
you know,
I mean,
you can't hide it forever. You just can't.
Yeah. And I mean, statistically, it's what, 10% of the population is homosexual, so.
Yeah. I mean, what are the odds that in this industry it just happens that nobody's ever, you know, I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's probably not 10% just because athletes are the, you know, 1% of 1% of 1%. So the odds are probably definitely, if you're just talking numbers, probably greater, but. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no way that there's never been or not currently is.
So I'm going to go ahead and leave that in because that was a really good conversation there, and there's no reason to edit it out. So we're now back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, but of course, you know, after time I can do things like that where I'm fixing the list and these guys get to talking about something and it's good, so we're just going to leave it in. So we're going to get back on to what we were talking about. That was something that we hadn't necessarily intended to talk about, but it's definitely on point. And let's just stay with Frenchie. That's not first on my list, but we'll stay there. Frenchie.
Ah, screw your list.
Right? You know, that's kind of the way our shows
let's
go.
More for this show.
Yeah, no joke. But I guess, you know, according to, you know, we talk to David Leske all the time. He's on one of our email lists, and he says that him and Clint, like, they'll call each other before they start a show for about 3 minutes before and go, okay, I guess this is what's going on. Oh, do we have a guest? Cool, here we go. And that's the way they go. So we're far more prepared than most, and we still can't get anything in order. So I guess it's just the way that podcasts go. But Frenchie was being Frenchie again yesterday, and you know, there's always people talk about having this leadership quality and that it means something in locker rooms that are winning and what have you. And Frenchie definitely brings a different attitude to a clubhouse. You can see that on the field as well as off the field. I mean, the whole it seems like he's got a childish humor that seems to work for this team. And, I mean, with them romping on each other at the end of the games and people getting bloody noses and everything after a game-winning hit, which always makes me really nervous. But his latest little jaunt into ridiculousness was yesterday he slides into third, and as he's getting up, he just gives a nut check to Eddie Rodriguez, who did not look to appreciate it very much at all. And this gif is all over the internet, but you definitely can get it at kingsofkaufman.com. And what was the name of that story, Mike? Do you remember offhand?
Well, the way that I put it, because I just keep a lookout for this on Kings of Kauffman. Anytime Frank Gore does something goofy, I'm just going to put it in our little hub on Kings of Kauffman, just there on the front page, as that one time Jeff Frank Gore did this. So, During the Detroit series, he made that big throw to get Victor Martinez out at the plate, where Martinez didn't even try to slide. He just peeled off to the dugout. So it was like that one time Jeff Francoeur made Victor Martinez look ridiculous. And so last night, after this thing kind of starts out, I put that one time that Jeff Francoeur tripled, then cup-checked Eddie Rodriguez. So that's what it says.
And I mean, Eddie Rodriguez, I know it caught him off guard, and he's kind of an older guy.
Oh, definitely.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know him. I don't know him at all. You don't really hear him talk much, so you don't know the kind of personality he has. But it just, he did not look pleased. He looked peeved. That was kind of, I put those two words together. They don't go together, so that's why it didn't work out. In the real world, a guy like that at work is the guy you hate.
Right.
But it just seems like that it works for this team. Or again, am I kind of reading into things?
No, I think it works. I mean, they're all younger. You know, and going back to 2011, a lot of these guys have been around each other since they were, you know, 19, 20 years old, things like that. So they're very, you know, you know from Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas, they're both close, but they're both a little goofy. You know, not quite to Frenchie levels, but they are. James Shields is kind of similar to that. And Jeremy Guthrie is surprisingly kind of goofy like that, too. Like, you wouldn't figure it, but he really is, maybe more than anybody. So, yeah, I think it kind of works. I mean, I think, you know, we were talking about skills that get overvalued, and I think the clubhouse thing is overdone. I think it can help, certainly. I mean, I've said it before that if you go to your job and you're there with people that you like and you have a good time when you're not doing the work, well, yeah, you're probably going to be a little more productive. You're going to be happier to get there. Maybe you're going to work harder. Maybe you're working harder because you want to help out everybody else. But, you know, then it ends up being this thing where how much does that actually impact the baseball team? I don't know. I don't think it's, you know, you could have the best friends in the world, you know, 25 best friends, and they can still stink. You know, but you could have 25 guys who hate each other, and they could win 100 games. You know, Yankees liked each other in the 80s. The A's hated them hated each other in the 70s, and they won. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I was going to mention the A's. That's what everybody brings up. But,
yeah.
I mean, I do think clubhouse chemistry is important, but not as important as everyone tends to think or to doesn't have the value that people ascribe to it, you know? However, you look at Jeff Francoeur, though, it's like he's been here 3 years, and this year is the first year that the Royals seem to be a legitimate contending team, and probably has very little to do with him or his attitude. But I think if you want to bark up that tree and talk about that point, something that I don't know if we necessarily had it on our list here, but James Shields, like, it's still early in the season, too early to make any judgments, and not even just about James Shields himself, who's having a great season so far, but, like, I mean, he's a guy who you can really see his attitude, you know, it's different than Francoeur's. Like, Francoeur brings that, like, kind of goofy, like you guys said, practical joker thing, but James Shields just has that, I hate that I'm going to say this, but that, like, kind of winning attitude the Royals always talk about that none of them actually ever seem to have. Like, you look at that guy, and you look at how intense he is, you look at how he goes about his business. I mean, he still jokes, he looks like he still has fun in the clubhouse, but the dude is, I mean, he's got that attitude, that kind of it factor, if you will, that people want to say Jeff Francoeur has, but he doesn't really have it. He's just a funny, nice guy. And, you know, people like to have those guys in the clubhouse, but I don't know how much they necessarily follow them in terms of bringing up their level of play and things like that. But James Shields on this team, I mean, I've seen a tangible difference in how the team plays, and I think a lot of it is from James Shields, just from what I've heard from people talking about how he is in the clubhouse, how he days when he's not pitching, he's still in the dugout, he's talking to other pitchers, he's talking about, you know, different approaches, talking about different pitches, different things like that. I mean, he's basically like an on-field coach, and I think those are two different types of clubhouse guys between a James Shields and a Jeff Francoeur, and James Shields kind of is what everyone wants Jeff Francoeur to be, but he's not, and I don't think he ever is, and I think part of it has to do with on-the-field results as well, because, I mean, let's face it, Jeff Francoeur's just aren't there. And, I mean, right now he's not doing quite as bad as he was last year, I suppose, but I guess I haven't looked at the numbers. I guess he could be, but I haven't looked at the numbers today.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just kind of, he is what he is, but James Shields, I mean, he's out there and he's doing it. So when he says something, you can be like, oh, okay, well, you know, he's actually out there and he's had multiple, you know, seasons that have garnered, that have been pretty good. You know, he's had at least one season where he's gotten Cy Young votes. I don't know if he's had more than that, but, you know, so you've got the results to look to versus Francoeur, where it's like, well, he was
good in 2005.
Exactly, yeah, he was cover on Sports Illustrated once. That was pretty cool, so maybe we should do what he says. Doesn't quite work like that. You know, I think you kind of, it was kind of muffled, Mike, but I think you mentioned is Francoeur just kind of like the weird older brother, and I think that's kind of how, if I'm Mike Moustakas or Eric Hosmer, that's kind of what I look to him as. I'm just, it's like, oh, he's nice to have, and it's nice to maybe help them get through some of the rough spots in terms of how to deal with people that are, you know, maybe heckling, or especially Moustakas and Hosmer last year, having, when they're struggling, how to get through that kind of stuff. But I don't know if they necessarily look at him as like, oh man, I want to play harder and well, you know, just for Jeff Francoeur. Whereas I think a lot of guys may be starting to look at James Shields that way.
Yeah, on the Shields thing, I think you look at last night, James Shields against his former team, leadoff batter gets on, he gives up a homer to the next batter, that's it. Like, he shut it down after that. And any other Royals pitcher in the past, you know, they're going to let, you know, Tampa get a run here, a run there, maybe it's a four-run game, you know, it just ends up, you know, spiraling out of control for some guys. The same thing with that game against Philadelphia, where he gave up four runs in the first inning and nothing was really hit all that hard, but that was all he gave up. You know, he shut the door right there and locked it down. And that is, you know, an example that, you know, those guys can look at and say, okay, well, yeah, there was some adversity. We gave up some runs, but, you know, he really, like, clamped down after that. And, you know, there's also Josh Vernier tweeted some things out about how the locker room is, and I guess they have this light. It's like a deer, I guess, and it has a neon W.
Like a light-up deer?
Yeah, and something like that. And at the end of every game, James Shields picks the player of the game, and if it's a win, they flip the light, and it lights up this W. So it's like this thing that he came up with to... It's working, I guess. I don't know exactly.
It's like the scene in Major League where they're pulling off the pieces of the woman, except it's
right.
Just a sign.
You got to have something, be it a, you know, a deer or Rachel Phelps, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right in that when you have those results, you know, not only he's a very good pitcher, but you know, he brings some of that attitude too. So, and that's something that Francoeur might have, the attitude. He doesn't necessarily have the results, and so it's tougher to, you know, measure his impact beyond what he does on the box score.
Well, and I would rather have Rachel Phelps than a deer light-up sign, but it's a big country. You know,
right.
Everybody in this town wants to get rid of the cowtown attitude or whatever, but I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing anyways, but it's things like this that kind of make you laugh, because even the players that come into our team bring a cowtown attitude because
they're all hunters
and whatever. So, just to kind of wrap this up, last night we were talking about this, and Spec 60, I'm trying to remember, Jared, I think, is his real name.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have it. I think that's what it is. And met him at, I think, at Three Guys in a Garage thing for the first time when I met him. And he's always pretty funny on Twitter, too. And last night, you and Mike and I and him were talking about Eddie Rodriguez not looking like he enjoyed that very much. And the culmination of the conversation, Spec goes, Frenchie doesn't get to see much of Eddie over there at third, so I'll allow it. And I think that's the best way to put it, because Frenchie's too busy, you know, doing that thing where he walks up to the plate, takes three swipes, and walks back to the dugout. I mean, that's what he's done the best in his career, it seems like. And Ned Yost and George Brett have went off on how many runs he saves and stuff. But I love Jeff Francoeur. I like all that he does. I think his goofiness is good and all that jazz. But I am starting to come around to the side of, I love him as a person, but he's not a player I want on my team anymore. Because for as good as his arm is, he misplays balls so badly sometimes. Like last night, I watched the game and I got home from work and the game was already over. And so I watched the condensed version on MLB.TV, which, by the way, if you've ever watched one of those, they're fantastic. It takes 10 to 20 minutes. You get through a whole baseball game and you have everything that happened pretty much. And so it's a great way to watch your games if you don't have much time. But I'll tell you, you look at some of the plays that he makes, and he just olayed a ball last night so bad, and I was like, really?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I knew what the final score was before it happened, so I wasn't real upset about it because it didn't cost us the game or anything. But there are times that you wonder if, for as good as he is out there, how much is he hurting us, too? But then that's where the conversation goes in. If you put you know, Dyson and Lorenzo Cain out there, how much of that fear, and you saw it a couple of times last night where, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, Francoeur laid that ball, but then later in the game, I can't remember who was where, but there was a guy at third, and he started to take off.
And he stopped.
And just stopped, and then you just watched the ball go by. I don't know if that was from Francoeur. I think it might have been, or who, but you wonder how much of an arm you give up by putting Lo Cain and Dyson out there. And Dyson makes some bad plays on balls, too. I'm not saying he's a perfect outfielder. But I'm not sure you give up anything defensively by replacing Dyson and Francoeur, essentially. Of course, Dyson most likely goes to center. But you guys, I think, get the point. You know, if you make that move, and now I had mentioned this in the offseason, and a couple of folks, I think Kevin Agee and a couple others had said, well, you give up too much on offense for that. But I don't think you do, because Dyson hits well enough. I mean, he's not a good hitter, but he gets on base enough because he's so fast that you don't give up that much over a 250 hitter like you are in Francoeur. So, I mean, there are some definite considerations to just pieces that are already on this team that would work just fine to move on from Francoeur. And this business that Brett and Ned and the rest want to give you about how great Frenchie is, at some point you got to move on, and hopefully that, if nothing else, that'll be by the end of this year. But I think if you're really in it to win it, I think that move has to come before the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, for every run that he saves, how many does he give back by, you know, the ole that you talked about? Or there were a couple plays in the Indian series where, you know, he went to the wall, and yeah, I'm pretty sure Lorenzo Cain makes the play that he didn't. You know, so you give up something in range, you give up something in the instinct, and I just don't. The arm's great, but it doesn't do much good if you can't get to the ball to throw it. You know, maybe he does save some runs by people knowing not to run on him, but I don't think it's enough to offset, you know, some of the deficiencies that he has in range, plus when you add in the fact that the guy is not going to get on base at a league average rate. He's just not. So you really have to either get more power from him, or he has to be very good defensively. And, you know, when you only have the arm, it just doesn't add up to me.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just going to echo that that's the ultimate question. Like, I haven't seen or heard anything to dispute the idea that Lorenzo Cain and Jerod Dyson both have just average arms. And, I mean, I think
Cain's
Lorenzo Cain...
good.
What?
Cain has a pretty good arm.
Yeah, he's made
some
amazing
throws.
It's
not Francoeur.
Right?
It's not Gordon. But it's, you know, you look at what Melky Cabrera gave in 2011, it's... at least that fun. It's at least that good. So I think that's,
yeah. Well, I guess I don't really know what average is, but then I mean,
kind of look at it.
What?
It's just kind of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, it just
the whole scouting thing.
I don't look. It doesn't look like Alex Gordon out there, or even Jeff Francoeur arm wise. But anyway, point being, it's not as if the arms aren't as good as Jeff Francoeur, you know, what do they bring to the table? And I think Lorenzo Cain brings a lot, but, you know, people keep talking about putting Jerod Dyson in center field and moving Cain to right field. And, I mean, I've never been all that super impressed with Jerod Dyson out there. I mean, his speed makes up for a lot, but unfortunately it has to make up for a lot because he seems to be getting a little bit better the more time he gets. But, I mean, I've seen him make some bad plays on balls. Like, he's just not – instinctually, he's just not quite there. And maybe that just comes with time. But, I mean, he's had a lot of time in the minor leagues. You know, it's not like this is his first time he's ever played outfield. So, I mean, that's the only question I would have. But it's not enough to make me say keep Francoeur out there. I still think I feel better about Dyson, Cain, Gordon – in the outfield than I do about the way it's current configuration.
Hey, Mike, are you recording this game that's on right now to watch later, or
no,
do you
I'm
care
watching
if I
it.
Mention? Okay. Apparently, it must be windy at the K because Mendoza just gave up back to back jacks to Joyce and Zobrist, and they were long, long gone. Well, hopefully, this will be like yesterday, and he'll get mad like James Shields did, and just shut him down the rest of the game, and we get and the Royals produce enough offense to get a win. But going back to where we kind of started the day, and we were talking about Moose and Hosmer. Hosmer's taking a beating nationally right now. Like I said, I listen to a lot of the ESPN podcasts, especially their Fancy Focus show, and they have differing hosts depending on what day of the week it is, and they've all been pretty down on Hosmer, and I've been down on Hosmer, and Mike has mentioned he's got a love affair with Hosmer, and it's been easy to be down on Moose, and Jeff started a race to 200, and we're not talking 200 hits or 200 home runs, we're talking 200 the batting average between Moose and Bubba Starling. This is like a Royals fan nightmare in a lot of ways, because you've got Starling, Hosmer, and Moustakas all really underperforming. Now, Moose seems to be playing better, and according to Ned, he turned the corner, or he's fixed. Their other favorite phrase that Royals fans just detest. Should we be really worried about these guys? Is it time to get to the point where you're going, where's the next big offensive piece going to be to go along with Billy Butler for this team?
Well, I mean, there isn't a next big piece. It's going to be these guys, and if it's not these guys, then it's, you know, more weight. Yeah, that they're the two biggest pieces in the lineup that have to perform. It's like Gordon and Butler are great, and they can do, you know, a lot of really good things, but they can't carry it completely. They've got to get production from these guys. You know, I mean, it goes back to stuff from spring training. You know, it's reasonable to be concerned, but I don't know about worry. I mean, these guys are 23, 24 years old. They played about the equivalent of two full seasons. There's still a lot of service time. There's still a lot of time for them to still come around. They could still come around this season. You know, we're only a month in. And, you know, what I have to do is I look at things that are different from last year, because Hosmer was, you know, he hit the ball hard the first month and nothing really worked out. But after that, then, yeah, that's all approach. That's all mechanics. And, you know, he wasn't picking good pitches to swing at, and he wasn't getting good swings on them. And so, yeah, he had a really bad year, and that's why people are so hard on him this year, because, you know, he hasn't been very good. But he is hitting better. He's making better choices at the plate. He looks better. I don't think anybody can deny that he looks, you know, like last year. I mean, there have been a couple times where maybe in one at bat he'll chop another one to second. And that happens, but he's, you know, being patient at the plate. He's still getting on base at a pretty reasonable rate. You want more power, but I'm not worried about Hosmer. I think he's coming out of it. Moustakas, you know, a lot of it is colored by the last week, but you know, they said that they were making some adjustments with him and that it was going to take a couple of days, and then a couple of days after they said that, he goes on this tear. So maybe they figured it out and they don't have to do anything, but if he goes through another prolonged slump of like a 1-for-20 or something, then yeah, that's probably where you start looking middle of May. You know, do you send him down and just look for getting him fixed so that long term he can be better off? Even if it means that, you know, you take a little bit of a hit over, you know, a month in the big leagues.
Yeah, and I think
I
feel like we've talked about it. No way. Sorry, I'm watching the game.
We're both watching the same play, I think.
Gordon just laced one to center field, and who's, I don't even know who their center fielder is. Who is
Desmond
that?
Jennings.
Desmond Jennings, there we go. Makes a great catch on the run. That was a double, if not more. So anyway, I think we've talked about this on the show before, and this isn't my thought, and I'm not the first one to say it, but I think it holds true that Eric Hosmer could be more important to this team than any other one player is. Definitely, I think, in the American League Central, but maybe even the rest of the American League. I mean, if Hosmer is a, you know, 320, 30 home run, 100 RBI guy like we were all hoping that he would be, I mean, how much different does this team look right now? You know, so this team can still eke out some wins like they've shown if he doesn't do that. But if they do, then this team just becomes so much more. And it's really tough with those two because you need to do so much. You need to be patient with them. But it's like we were talking about earlier with Moustakas. For me, that his issue is that I've seen carryover of his problems. Whether they're, like I said, I'm not a scout, so whether they're with the swing, with his approach, whatever, they look similar. He keeps popping the ball up. He keeps swinging at the same kind of pitches. And you were right, Mike. You said Eric Cosmer, he looks different this year. He looks better this year than he did last year. And that is absolutely true. He looks more confident at the plate. He's got a better approach. His swing looks better. He still kind of falls into that trap where he tries to pull that pitch that's kind of outside to a left-handed hitter and just whiffs on it every time. Takes this huge hack and just whiffs. I didn't really see that as much his rookie year. I started noticing that last year a lot, and it seems to kind of carry over, but it's getting better, though. And so I see those things, so I'm willing to stick with Hosmer a little bit more. And you said it right, he's hitting. I mean, I think he's hitting only 250 at this point, but that's still better than he did last year. So,
right.
But yeah, I mean, that's the issue. I think that's what you look for with the young players like that, is if you see strides like that from a Hosmer, that makes me feel better, even if he's not exactly producing right now because it's early. But when you don't see the strides with someone like Moustakas, that's when I really get worried. And who knows, at some point, maybe he starts to get out of it. But right now, I just don't have a lot of confidence in Moustakas because he just looks like he can't get out of his own way. Like, he cannot figure out his own problem. And, maybe people talked about Alex Gordon early in his career, how part of his problem might have been that he wasn't exactly listening to the coaches. He wasn't exactly listening to what he just kind of, I'm Alex Gordon. I was in Sports Illustrated, all this stuff. I'm going to do it my way, and that's how it's going to be. Well, it didn't work. He was humbled by going back down to the minors. He started listening to coaches, turned it around. Boom, look at him. He's an all-star caliber player. Maybe that's what it's going to take for Moose to figure it out. I certainly hope not. And if that is what it takes, I hope it would happen sooner. But I mean, it just seems maybe he is listening and taking some adjustments, but it certainly seems like he just continues to have the same type of problems.
I guess we'll see with time, but it's hard to say, what we're going to get out of these guys. But if they don't work out, like you said, it's going to be a long, sad road.
Yeah, I mean, there's no backup behind them yet. I mean, there are guys coming up, but they're not ready to this point. But if they figure it out, they don't have to be ready. They don't have to have that. But there's no safety net if it's not them. They'll have to go out and acquire somebody or make a trade or do something.
Yeah, I didn't hit on that, but I really quickly, I think that's the kind of flip side. What position does it put them in if they don't produce, and if they're to the point where the Royals think they're not going to produce? And I mean, I've said it before on this show, and I still think it holds true. If the Royals win less than 75 games and Moustakas and Hosmer are in that, hitting below 250 for the season again, both, then, I mean, I really do think you look at the possibility of a house cleaning in the front office and possibly a fire sale in terms of the Royals players, because they've got at least 2 years until that. I mean, they've got a lot of really good talent in the lower minors, but it's at least 2 years before they start seeing any fruits of that coming up. So that's just to kind of underline the importance of this season and kind of their play. That's my opinion. I haven't heard anybody else say that, but I honestly think that could be a reality if this thing goes south, but it appears so far that it doesn't look like it will.
Well, and there are solutions to it. Rainey brought up one. I was going to go a little more in depth into this, but we'll just hit on it, and then we're going to take a quick break. But Rainey had made the remark that relievers only have a short lifespan, and boy, if this team doesn't get that by now, they'll never will. I mean, look at Soria. The Royals should have been on top of trading him long before they tried to make that move, and could have gotten pretty good value for him, and they waited too long. And so now you got to look at this abundance they have in the bullpen, and maybe that's where you pick up another bat with a couple of bullpen guys. You know, I know Mike would cry a long time if Kelvin Herrera went somewhere else, but if it helped to bring in a decent bat that you really need, then that might make a difference. When we come back, we're going to do Mike's going to take us through the minor league wraparound, and we're going to talk about our good friend Jason Adam and his struggles and all the other pitchers that are still coming up. And again, that'll play into the fact that we have all these guys that are pitching seven innings deep and then all the guys that are behind them. So we'll be right back on the other side.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here. And that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air-conditioned and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson, and I'm joined by Michael Engel and Jeff Furr. Follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault, and we'd love to hear your opinions. Also, I got lots of Kelly's gift certificates to give away, so send us your emails at either royalmanreport@gmail.com or kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com, or tweet us your opinions, and if we get one that's used on the show, we'll send you a gift certificate. And, you know, free is good, so there you go. Hey, Mike, why don't you take us around the minor leagues?
Well, let's just take a look at some of the better performers, or let's just pick out some names. How about? I mean, we talked about Johnny Giovitella at length. He's hitting .326 down in Omaha. He's doing really good job down there. David Lowe hitting .360 in Omaha. Anthony Saratelli hitting .302. So those guys are doing really well. Christian Colon's hitting .227. Irving Falu is hitting .233. So those are some of your options.
Did I lose everybody or just Mike?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I hear you, Jeff.
Okay, you cut out for a minute there,
yeah,
Mike.
Cut out for a second, Mike.
All that I was saying about not having to edit, I guess we're...
Well, there we go.
Fix that. All right.
Why we don't
you
do
were talking... You got through Johnny Giovitella and Irving Falu, and then you... That's where you trailed off, was Irving Falu. So pick it up from there.
Okay. And Falu and Christian Colon, they're not really hitting very well. Those are the guys that are going to be your backup infield options. So maybe that's why the Royals aren't doing anything on that front either. But when I look at the pitchers in Omaha, Chris Dwyer, who I think everybody gave up on, right now it's only 5 starts, so the small sample size applies here. But he's 3-1, 31.2 innings pitched, and he has a 2.56 ERA. Even better, he's only walked 10 batters, which that's always been the problem for him, has been controlling the walks. So if he's only doing, you know, 3 batters per 9 innings, that's serviceable. That's somebody who you can take a look at down the line. Maybe he's nothing more than a swing man like Will Smith or Nate Adcock or Everett Tiefert or any of those guys. But it's at least getting something else out of the farm system, considering that he was, you know, a former top 20 pick or a top 20 prospect at one point. You know, they had him higher than Duffy. They had him higher than Montgomery in some rankings, even higher than John Lamb in some cases. So, you know, he's got a lot of talent, but it's never really come around. But finally, he's showing something. In Northwest Arkansas, it's kind of a weird mix-up there because – you know, we're kind of looking at two tiers of the system where you have some guys who are capable of producing at the big league level in AAA, but you're still kind of waiting for guys to filter up. Brett Eibner he's getting on base a little bit, but he's still not hitting the ball that well. Manny Pena is hitting okay. Mitch Canham just a minor league guy that they signed down there. He's really more filler, but he's leading the team with a 988 OPS in Northwest Arkansas. The big guy, though, that everybody wants to talk about is Yordano Ventura, who just had a great start where he struck out 10 batters yesterday. He has had some shorter outings. He started 5 games and only has 23.1 innings. So I think the Royals are going to want to see him really pick up, you know, a little bit more efficiency. But that'll also happen with strikeout pitchers. So that's kind of the trade-off that you get with him. The guy that I know that we probably ought to talk about a little bit is Jason Adam, who has really struggled at AAA so far. Before we started recording, Jeff and I were talking about, you know, that jump. And, you know, going from high A to double A is one of the bigger jumps in pro baseball. You know, the only bigger one is really going from AAA to the majors. So he's got that going against him. He's also going from the Carolina League, which is very much a pitching and defense league. He pitched in Wilmington, which is one of the better pitcher parks in minor league baseball. And he comes into Arbest Field in the Texas League, which is much more offensive environment. So he's got that going, but at the same time, you know, he's given up 38 hits. He's got a whip of 2.41 and a 12.84 ERA. So his first four starts were really bad. His last one was better. So he finally came around and had a five-inning start and gave up only 2 runs. So that's encouraging, but there's still a lot of work to do. I know, Troy, you were talking to him a little bit on Twitter about this, and he seemed more confident after that good start. Is that kind of what – did you talk to him any more about that?
No, and I haven't called him or anything. I kind of given him space because if you look at his Twitter feed, it's been pretty barren lately. I think this season's really kind of gotten to him. And, you know, we talked a lot last year about how hard the move is from A to double A, and I think it's really showing right now. And I, you know, I was seriously concerned, you know, for his mental state, because the guy is a pretty strong guy. Like, he's got a pretty good, from what we've talked to him and stuff, he understands the process, right? Mm-hmm. And he knows that it's not going to happen overnight, but I'm sure that it occurs to him that people like Ventura and some of the others are passing by him and outperforming him. And that's got to be scary, you know, knowing that you're trying to fight for 5 spots on a Major League Baseball team. And this guy's already ahead of you all of a sudden that was below you a level at one point. And so I know that some of that weighs on him a little bit, but he says he's more confident now. I mean, the quote was, "I didn't get off to the start I'd hoped for, but I'm feeling confident now." And so, I mean, I can only take that for what it's worth. And I think he's going to turn it around. I sure hope so. I mean, obviously he's the best friend of the podcast. He's damn near a guest host anymore. It seems like he's been on so many times. So it just it's been hard for him, and that makes me sad because he is such a good guy, and I want to see him, you know, do well, and I want him to make it to the majors because that's good for us as a show, and it's good for him because that's what he deserves, and he's a KC guy and all those kinds of things. So we'll see how he turns it around, though. You know how it you know,
it's
how
only
it goes
5 starts
business.
So I mean, 5 starts, he could just as easily go off on his 5 next starts and turn it completely around.
And he could be just like Chris Dwyer, where he has a horrible year, and then all of a sudden he gets up to AAA somehow, and, you know, they get him out of Texas where balls – or out of the Texas League, I should say, out of Northwest Arkansas, where balls do fly there. I mean, we've talked to Eric Edelstein about that, on how that park was built a little unsuspecting, and it has a bit of a jet stream. So, I mean, there is some to say for park factor there, but he's got to figure it out, and he's got to do well enough that he can get a spot when a spot opens in AAA. And Omaha's a great place to pitch. It's a great park. It's a great minor league baseball park, both for watching and for pitching and for hitting. It's a pretty fair park all the way around, so it would give Jason a really good chance to showcase what he has. But, you know, the thing that's good is that there is still a lot of arms in the system, and that a lot of the arms are still producing, which has always been a problem for the Royals. And now it seems that the hitters have slowed down, but, you know, I think it's easier to find a hitter than it is a pitcher. And I think that's been true the last few years.
Well, yeah. It's easier to keep a hitter healthy too.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Tampa Bay Rays.
Well, yeah, but even and they can't produce hitters.
That's
you
what
know?
I'm saying. So like you're so,
well,
you're,
they are tonight.
Yeah, jeez. But so you're talking about the arms in the system, like the Mike you talked about Yordano Ventura. I mean, I said it on Twitter a couple times, but this Yordano Ventura just fascinates me as a prospect. Like he's 5'11". What's he? 160 pounds, and he's
yeah.
a guy that. Well, according to Fangraphs, it's 178 pounds, which I highly doubt that. But anyway, he's undersized. He's, you know, you hear the term a lot, like high effort, hard thrower, those type of terms that basically are what they sound. You know, it just like takes him gets a lot of velocity, but takes a lot of effort. And if I hear undersized and max effort, high hard thrower or whatever, which I've actually heard he's kind of toned down his delivery a bit, and that's maybe a little bit of predicating on some of his success. But like when you hear those things when he's first starting out, it's like in the Royals system is in their history of developing pitchers, those two mm-hmm. things put together mean
you're
either
kind
one of two things,
for it to...
a reliever yeah. or not in baseball.
Right.
I mean,
something's going to break.
The way it's gone.
Yep.
And, like, against all odds, the dude is just flourishing in the system. And he's got he's putting up great numbers in Double A. I would expect a promotion to Triple A, you know, probably, I'd say around June if he can keep this going. And then I would expect him to be able to compete for a rotation spot in spring training next year, assuming everything keeps going. And to think that he's just a year away from competing legitimately for a spot in this rotation, to me, is just fascinating. Because just when he was coming up, you know, when he was back when I was writing for Kings of Kauffman and doing all the minor league stuff, it was just everyone, you know, he's a reliever, he's a reliever, he's a reliever. And yeah. and now you hear people saying, oh, you know, he's got that, he's a 2-3 guy, and he could be, you know, could even flash some ace type stuff. And it's just, it's fascinating to me. I just think it's really interesting. I hope for, he's one of my favorite kind of guys in the system, just because I really hope he can kind of buck the trend and be a successful major leaguer for this team.
Just a quick note, since we're in this minor league corner, for those of you listening, on the 1st of May, Chesler Cuthbert, who's another one of those names that you hope to see work out, he hit a walk-off homer for the Wilmington Blue Rocks just now. So at least that's going well for the Royals system right now, because the major league team is not having a good day. Leske just tweeted that this is as bad as he's seen Mendoza since April of last year. No command and no control. And one thing that we didn't get to tonight, guys, and we still can if you want, or we can save it because I think we're going to have another edition of it here in about 5 minutes, but is the Twitter panic that sets in on Royals fans. Did you guys want to talk about that, or you want to save it for next week?
Let me finish. We got a lot of minor leaguers.
Oh, sorry.
We're only halfway
Go
through
ahead.
The system, man. We got four levels to get through.
My bad. Go ahead.
Well, we're talking about, you know, minor league arms. You know, one of the big ones is John Lamb, who they actually skipped a start for him, which I guess got me worried, you know, naturally, because he's coming off of Tommy John surgery and the recovery hasn't been swift by any stretch. So I was, you know, worried, is there more pain or anything? Apparently it was just to give him a turn off. He came back yesterday, threw six innings, struck out seven, walked just one. So far, he's got 19 innings, 3-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, 3.32 ERA. I haven't really seen much on the velocity to see if that's coming back, but I haven't heard that it had dropped anymore, and I know I would have heard that. So it's kind of looking good for him. Kyle Zimmer's in Wilmington as well. He just had a really, really rough start the other day. Gave up 5 runs in 4 innings. But prior to that, you know, he'd been looking pretty good. Strikeout numbers look great. I mean, he struck out 34 in 22.2 innings, which is very good considering it's his first turn through high A. Another guy, Kyle Smith, he's got 29 strikeouts in 19.1 innings pitched down there. So he's coming around pretty good, too. He's got a 29-8 strikeout-to-walk ratio. which is really good. Let's take a look at Lexington, the new affiliate for the A-ball level Royals, and that's where all kind of the big names are. You got Bubba Starling down there, Adalberto Mondesi, who apparently goes by Raul, like his dad,
shut
which
up.
Is strange. Yeah.
Isn't that his brother's name, too?
Right.
You're joking.
No.
He just goes by Raul.
So it's Raul Mondesi.
It's at least his middle name or something.
I have no idea if it's his middle name or not. Let me take a look at him real quick. But he's doing pretty well considering that, you know, I don't think he's old enough to buy cigarettes yet.
So, I don't think he's old enough to drive yet, is he?
He won't be 18 for 2 months.
Right.
Oh, he's 17. I didn't even realize he was that old. I thought he was 16.
He's got nine extra base hits and 92 at bats. That's pretty good. He's got a 746 OPS. You know, the home run power is not there, but he does have three triples. But, I mean, if nothing else, he's holding his own at a level where guys are 22 years old on average. You know, so he's doing extremely well. Bubba Starling started out 2-for-26. Since he's hit a little bit better, but overall he's not doing that great. Batting average 195. He does have four homers in the month of April, though. So things in the last week and a half or so really kind of turned around for him. So hopefully he can kind of turn something on. And we've talked a lot about the bust potential of him, and it's very real. So, you know, we just got to keep monitoring it. Some other big arms down there, Brian.
Thing that I want to say sometime on the show, but
we'll okay, well. You can go ahead.
You know, this show's about talking, and you get to do that, so there's something you wanted to say.
I didn't know if we want to stretch it tonight. I don't know.
Go for it.
Well, I'll just I'll make it quick, but I feel like they obviously should give him, you know, the whole rest of the season to try and, you know, figure it out and see what happens if he can be a hitter, but just after reading that article that Jason Parks wrote, having him on the show, hearing him talk about how there's just some things that maybe were too late in development for Bubba Starling to really excel at, and maybe, you know, hitting for average might be one of them. Well, he's already displayed, as Mike said, he's got four home runs, you know, and he's hitting 195. So he's got the power. It's there. I just, if he goes the rest of this season and hits, you know, 200 or right around that, then I don't wonder if you just, like, put him in the fall league and throw him up there and say, all right, you cannot swing for the first three pitches of every at-bat or something like that, and just try and see if you can't teach him to be, like, the most disciplined hitter out there, and then just slowly morph him into Adam Dunn, where he might hit 230, but he's going to knock 35 home runs. Because if Bubba Starling is never going to hit for average, well, if he can come up to the majors and play gold glove defense in center field, which people are saying he can do, steal 30 bases and hit 30 home runs, but he's hitting 230 with striking out 30% of the time, that's still a pretty valuable player. So that's just my philosophy. That's something that I've had fun thinking about, so I thought I'd throw it out there.
No, that makes sense, because, I don't know. Adam Dunn, you know, all he does, he is the definite three true outcomes guy. He either homers, strikes out, or walks. And Jack Cust was a lot like that, too, where, you know, the average is going to look bad, but, you know, if you've got a guy and the average is bad, but his on base is like 320, 330, and he's hitting 30 homers, you'll take that, because, I mean, he makes up for the lack of production, you know, with the batting average in other areas. And that might be something that Starling has to do. And when you add in that he has speed, that does give him a little extra that, you know, Jack Cust didn't have that, and Adam Dunn certainly doesn't have that, and something that maybe that is what he's destined for, but I don't know.
I don't even know if you can teach that into a player. I mean, my gut tells me you probably can't, but if I'm the Royals and
probably
that's the way this season goes, I'd try it, you know?
Yeah,
it's all part of that whole thing. It's like that's part of the recognition where it takes him a little bit longer to kind of figure out where the ball is going to be and if he needs to pull the trigger or not. I mean, it's such a tough game in that sense. So it's, I get why there are struggles, but it's still pretty frustrating to have it happen to a guy that, you know, $7.5 million bonus and, you know, is touted as, you know, potential superstar at some point. And then to have him have these kind of troubles. So it's just going to have to be one of those waiting things. I think he's going to play out the whole season at this level. You know, they'll probably go level by level until he shows that they have to go, you know, and accelerate that. And so you might have to wait a little bit for him to actually make the big leagues. And then once he does, who knows? I mean, you don't know until either the flip, you know, the light switch turns on or they have to look at some other option or you just, you know, come to grips with the fact that maybe he doesn't ever turn into what, you know, you ever thought he would ever be. Fun fact, Raul Mondesi leads that team in RBIs. Our Raul.
Okay.
I'm never going to feel right calling him Raul Mondesi because that's just ridiculous. But okay, we'll let him do what he wants.
I can't believe he goes by Raul. That cracks me up.
It's so crazy because his brother's in baseball too, and he's Raul Mondesi Jr., I believe. So,
right.
It's really weird. I mentioned the tweet about Chesil Cuthbert getting a walk off. I don't know if I mentioned who that was from. That's from 5JRose5. I wanted to make sure I paid appropriate credit. Meanwhile, this game is trying to sum up everything we're talking about as Moose gets a hit because he's obviously fixed, and immediately following, Jeff Francoeur strikes out on 3 pitches.
Naturally.
Yeah. What else, you know? So.
Yeah, and they're getting shut down by Jeremy Hellickson.
Which kind of hurts because that was one of the guys that they had talked about possibly going after instead of James Shields. But, you know, the only way that trade would have been super, super awesome was if it would have been Hellickson and Shields, or Shields and Moore. But Moore hasn't even been that good this year. But anyways, continuing on.
Wait, what?
Matt Moore? Matt Moore's been great.
I thought he's had a – I thought
David,
I heard them
David
talking.
David Price has had kind of a rough start.
David Price has been getting hit. David Price is busy.
Well, that shows you how closely I follow Tampa Bay baseball. Although
Jeff has an excuse.
It's true. My Alex Gordon order. Is on that team, so.
Right.
You can't pick who your Alex Gordon is, you know?
No.
I don't know that I have an Alex Gordon right now. I think it – No,
Adam is your Alex.
Yeah, absolutely,
yeah,
he is.
Adam. It totally is.
And then, did you have anything left on your minor league report there?
No, I just like looking at the names and kind of taking a look.
Fantasizing.
Just thinking about what could be. I mean, Miguel Almonte's not throwing that great. His numbers don't look good, but he's getting strikeouts. And there's a couple of interesting guys. Allie Williams, his ERA looks bad, but he's had some good efforts out there from what I've seen off like Twitter play-by-play and things like that. And there's a guy down there in Lexington. His name's Aroni Nina, and he's kind of one of those under-the-radar guys that a lot of people expect to see him rise. And he's actually pitching pretty well down there. So that's somebody we can kind of keep an eye on through the year and see how he progresses. Yeah.
What about Yelier Hernandez, Mike? How's he doing?
You caught me in a rough position because I closed the window.
I think I still got mine up. I can check it out myself.
I don't know.
Hey, random piece of information here. The Yankees have the Yankees disabled list has the 15th highest payroll in baseball.
That's ridiculous.
And there's no salary cap needed in baseball, is there?
No.
That's stupid.
Looks like
and then the Dodgers have four of their big name starters on the DL.
Yeah.
I mean, Greinke, because he's stupid and doesn't move when a player that's bigger than him is running at him and gets his shoulder broke, his collarbone broke. And I've had a broken collarbone. It's not fun. I've broken my left one twice. And on top of that, Clayton Kershaw may be done for the year. I mean,
what?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
He's the one that that I think is the buzzsaw. I think that's who that is.
It's Cy Young winner.
And it looks like Yelier Hernandez has not played in 2013. Is he injured or something?
No, he must be in extended spring training or something.
Huh, that's odd.
I don't know. Maybe I need to make a trip down to Phoenix and find out if I can see any of these players that are working out in extended spring.
He played 60 games last year. I think that's a full short season.
Yeah, that sounds
right. Yeah, it was a short season. He was in Idaho Falls. So,
huh. Interesting.
Alrighty, guys. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Unfortunately, I'd love to talk about Royals baseball all night, and we had another couple of topics we wanted to get to, but we've been recording for an hour and 20 minutes, and my fiance is giving me the eye. So it's time for us to get some dinner at 6 o'clock here. So I will work to get this up hopefully tonight, if not tomorrow, first thing and all that jazz. So for Michael Engel and Jeffer, I'm Troy Olson. We'll have much more to talk about next week here on the Kansas City Baseball Vault, because even when we're not prepared, we get an hour and 20 minutes of recording. So for all of us, thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate it. Go to Kelly's and have a great week. Go Royals.